Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. On today's show, we'll recap the Badgers' latest contest on the basketball court. Unfortunate loss for them to Michigan State Friday evening, so we'll kind of dive into that, talk about what went right and what went wrong for the Badgers in that contest. So, an unfortunate loss, but certainly some things to take and gain from that as the team moves forward and continues to get into Big Ten play. So we'll talk about everything from that contest. And then in the back half of the show, we've got some football news to discuss. Of course, we've got the coaching rumors that we've kind of seems like we've been talking about for a couple weeks now in terms of the offensive line coach and the, of course, new offensive coordinator, which has now been a position that has been posted and out there. Wisconsin is certainly looking, and they've got their top choice picked out. If it ends up being that, and in fact, Bobby Engram, will certainly talk about that. But right now, it still seems like it's kind of in that rumor mill situation. But we'll get into everything that's came and kind of developed in that situation over the past few days, because I know we've talked about these two spots in pretty much every episode, just kind of waiting for that official confirmation. But for right now, we'll continue to kind of build on what's been some strong rumors coming out in that circuit. And then after that, we'll talk about some depth chart positions. Then we're going to dive into some outside linebacker talk, and we'll also wrap up some special teams talk as we kind of head into next year. So it should be a nice episode for you guys to start your week off. Matt, how are you this morning?
Doing great. Got to shovel this morning at about 5:30, so feeling good, feeling great, ready to talk a little Badgers. How are you doing, man?
Good. Got the body loose, and hopefully you shook off what was a tough weekend for Wisconsin and Badger or Packer fans across the state after a ugly loss. Thankfully, we've had a day to purge it, and the NFL games, while tough to watch when your team gets eliminated on Saturday, it was still a pretty great Sunday with those two divisional games there being quite entertaining. So hopefully everyone was able to purge that Packer game from their system and make this Monday morning not as rough. But the weekend was kind of rough in general, and it started with this Wisconsin basketball team taking on Michigan State. Of course, came into this game, a huge contest. Both of these teams were atop the Big Ten standings with one loss, so this game was really going to put one team in the driver's seat. And, of course, Michigan State's got a tough contest coming up with Illinois, so you thought, man, if Wisconsin could pick up this win, it'd be huge for them moving forward. But the big news to start the game, and I think it was part of the news piece that really affected the Badgers throughout this entire game, was Tyler Wahl, unfortunately, out in that contest with a lower leg ankle injury that he suffered in that Northwestern game, was not able to give it a go. And just without his presence, it just, this team kind of felt like a completely different team. He's been playing his best basketball, so it was really tough for him to not get a chance in that moment. But just how big of a blow was it, for this team to not have that presence in there in this game against Michigan State?
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely huge. He's been playing his best basketball his career, really looking back since Nickel State. He's been playing really well, or I guess you could say since that Ohio State game where he was under the weather. I mean, since then, 12 points, 18 points, 6 points, 16 points, 21, 20, 14. And he was hitting the boards, playing really assertive on the offensive end. So to not have him and his presence on each end, like, he does so many of the little and big things for this team, that not having him on the court against the front line that Michigan State brings, which is really experienced and really long, Wisconsin struggled. There's no depth behind their starting five. Wisconsin has relied on their starting five all year long. Outside of Chris Vogt, you haven't seen major minutes from a lot of these guys. I mean, you can look at it. Warren Bowman is the next up as your kind of your seventh guy, and he's only averaging 10 minutes a game. Like, you're not seeing somebody. It's not like Johnny Davis last year where he was playing nearly starter minutes. They don't have that. So I think you're looking right now at they ran into a team that played well. Wisconsin was down one of their best players, and they didn't have an answer. And I know it was a frustrating game, but really it was one that it's good. That was going to be a tough game either way, especially when you're out one of your top players. I just don't think that Wisconsin going into that had much of a chance without Tyler Wahl, because nothing against Ben Carlson or Carter Gilmore, but they had no shot against what Michigan State had in their front court. They are not nearly far along to a point where you want to trust either of them with 20 plus minutes going up against guys who've played in the Big Ten for multiple years and have multiple inches on you, multiple pounds on you and of strength that they just don't have right yet. And it's hopefully it'll come. But right now that was a game that definitely exposed that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you look at those two, just, you know, and Gilmore and Carlson, just really no matchup for what Michigan State had in the front court. And that's not, like you said, it's not a knock on them. Coming into the season, you would have never wanted those two to be in that position as you work through, you know, but you were obviously expected to have Tyler Wahl in that position. And when there's an ankle injury, somebody else has got to step up, but you can't sit here and expect that either of those guys are going to come in and be able to handle and give you huge minutes. Maybe certain contests, you know, if they were able to go, if this situation was going against Northwestern, now they've got some length as well, but, you know, Nebraska coming up, situations like that, maybe you can hold your own. But against a team like Michigan State, who's very talented in the front court, but also really well coached to know, hey, they don't have one of their best interior guys. We're going to go at them down low, which is what they did. I mean, Michigan State did a lot of good things on the offensive end, but really they dominated in the paint, on the boards. They just seemed to get second chance opportunities because they were grabbing rebounds. Plus 19 on the boards for Michigan State. So their forwards were just all over the court making plays. And, you know, Tyler Wahl, it would have been a really interesting game to see how this game shook out with Tyler Wahl in there. But without him, it was just a really tough hill and, I think, battle to overcome with, you know, I think if you look at the starting five of this Wisconsin basketball team, of course, with Johnny Davis, we've seen when he's not been able to go what this team looks like. But they've still been in a contest. If Brad Davison wasn't able to go, I think you could survive the storm. But a guy like Tyler Wahl, who's a big interior presence, a guy that just does so much on both ends of the floor, that he might be the toughest to replace in terms of injury and trying to find that production from other spots. And it was clear to that on Friday that he's a piece that Wisconsin, if they want to, you know, win a lot of games, compete for the Big Ten, and you know, go deep into March, he's the guy that they're going to need because he's just does so many different things well, and he was kind of at the peak of his play over these last couple of weeks heading into this contest. So it was really a tough blow to not have him out there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you would hope that Carlson would be further along in his development as a guy that could give you those minutes and hold his own, play well enough to do it, but he didn't, right? Like, I think that was pretty obvious. Carter Gilmore, he's a walk-on, right? Like, he's a walk-on. He shouldn't be out there as much as he has had to be. I think he has shown that. But you just got to hope that they continue to develop and that Wahl is back as soon as Thursday when they've got their next game here. But this was a game that Michigan State dominated across pretty much everything. Wisconsin shot better at the free throw line, and that's about the only statistic you can point to and say Wisconsin was better there. And the only reason was Michigan State also got to the line, though, 28 times. They were very aggressive getting to the basket. Say what you want about referees, but the referees weren't the difference of 12 points here in this game. Wisconsin shot the ball, finished shooting over 40%, and shot 60% in the second half. But they just didn't play a lick of defense. Like, Michigan State was able to run on them. They had 21 fast break points. Their bench, everybody was scoring. Like, they shot over 50% in the first half. They shot over 50% for the game. This was just an effort that they completely waxed the Badgers, and Wisconsin didn't have any answers. Brad Davison even talked about it in the second half. He said, or I mean in post game, he said, if we don't play defense, like, we're not going to win these games. Like, they didn't. They really struggled with the transition game and getting back, and they just kind of never were able to turn it around. That deep hole that they built after they got an 8-0 run to start the game, built on four turnovers by Michigan State. From there, the avalanche hit, mm-hmm. and Michigan State just kind of slowly won over this game and kind of just took over. Johnny Davis, Brad Davison, they did well. They were 16-32, 50% shooting. They did everything you could to win this game, but there just wasn't anybody else coming to help them out. I know Chucky Hepburn struggled a little bit on both ends of the court. I thought Stephen Crowell, he's still got to be more aggressive. You want to see that from him. He had 9 points, but I think just if he would have been a little bit more aggressive on the offensive end at times where he wasn't hunting his shot, I think that would have helped. But really, it comes down to, and it's going to continue to come down to, this team is built on their starting five. Their bench is not there right now. You want a guy like Jacoby Neath, who gives mm-hmm. you a little bit of versatility to get healthy and get right, but he's still kind of working his way back. But, I mean, bench points-wise, Michigan State scored 43 of their 86 points, so half of their points off the bench. Wisconsin, 7. Like, there's nothing there. Chris Vogt didn't give them what he normally does off the bench. He was dealing with some foul trouble, and they just didn't get the help they needed from their bench and from the guys stepping up for Tyler Wahl being out to win this game, and Michigan State took advantage.
Yeah, they certainly did. I mean, you talk about it. This, you know, we've talked about the bench for, you know, it seems like every time we do a recap, that's kind of a thing that we bring up, is that the bench needs to do more, you know, need a little bit more from the bench in terms of scoring and production. And I don't know if you're ever really going to get that. I think you're now looking at the way this team is built. You've got 5, you've got 6 that you can go to, you've got, you know, 7 and vote that you can asked to do, but no one in that 5, 6, 7, 8 range are guys that are kind of going to come in and give you a spark in terms of scoring. You know, Chris Vogt's a guy that's a big body, can get in there on the glass, can play defense as a big, but you're not going to expect him to give you a ton of points. But someone off that bench, you would hope, is eventually going to be able to find their way into minimal production. But right now, they just don't have it, and that's going to be, you know, that's just how the roster is. It's not like you can just call somebody else up and make these decisions and get all of a sudden, you know, some scoring. It's going to come down to the way the starting five plays. And when you're shorthanded without one, that puts an even bigger hamper on this team. But, you know, even if Tyler Wahl is in there, and certainly it would help, you know, on the offensive end, it would help on the defensive end. But I think even the rest of the starting five, as he mentioned, did not play, you know, Wisconsin basketball level defense. And I think that, you know, you could point to the, you know, like you mentioned, you could point to the refs, but that wasn't a difference. You could point to Tyler Wahl. That's, of course, a major difference. But even if he's out there, the way this team played defense as a whole, I mean, they're not going to win basketball games playing that way. The Michigan State was able to do really whatever they wanted. They were able to get the ball up and down the court and kick it out and just go, and Wisconsin didn't have an answer for it. I mean, if you're allowing 86 points, you know, Wisconsin basketball historically, games played into the 80s, probably not a situation where we're going to come away with a victory. Wisconsin needs to. They played a little bit more tempo this year. They played a little bit faster, but you still want this team, even if they're playing quicker on the offensive end, to be sharp on the defensive end. That's the way this team is going to win games, and they just did not play well enough to, especially a talented Michigan State team that, again, is well coached and can get out and do so many things well. If you're not playing your best defensively against a team like that, you're gonna get beat, and you saw that Badgers play better in the second half, and they shot all right. You know, the numbers, like you mentioned, are still certainly there, but if you don't have things tight on that defensive end from the get go, that's gonna be a situation where we're gonna be in trouble out of the gate.
Yeah, the game reminded me a lot of the Illinois State game where Wisconsin kind of narrowly got that victory at the Kohl Center, but where Illinois State was able to run on them, get inside, not only with the slashing with their guards, but also their front court players. And Wisconsin was able to eke away a win there. This was a team that's obviously about 2 times better. And the result was they weren't able to take advantage on the offensive end enough to overtake that. But I think the Badgers are just fine. You look at their next couple contests here. You've got Nebraska and Minnesota. That is a nice way to hopefully give yourself a couple games to, you know, get that neck cracked before you have to go to Champaign to play Illinois. So hopefully Wisconsin can take care of business. That Nebraska game has been moved from Tuesday to Thursday just because of COVID stuff going on in Nebraska's locker room. But Thursday at 4, Wisconsin's got to take care of business there. They got to come back to the Kohl Center on Sunday with a quick turnaround and take down Minnesota. But I think Wisconsin's going to be just fine. You've got to think that Tyler Wahl's going to be back here soon. It doesn't seem like it's something that's going to be a long-term lingering thing, but you never know.
Yeah, that certainly would be a situation to keep an eye on as he works back. And then, yeah, this team will hopefully have a couple days here with this game not tipping off till Thursday to hopefully tighten some things up defensively, get some things figured out, and be ready for that contest Thursday afternoon at Nebraska, 4 p.m. Central Time start. For that one. So it should be a fun contest to see how they bounce back. And then, as you mentioned, a quick turnaround to take on Minnesota on Sunday. All right, that wraps up kind of our basketball talk. So why don't we go ahead, we'll get our ad reads out of the way now, and then we'll hop into some football discussion.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. So football time. Again, we've talked about these couple coaching staff positions a little bit over the last couple weeks, but now it's starting to look like things are getting closer towards official. I think until we see the official report from UW, we're still kind of working on these are reports and everything like that. But according to a couple different outlets, Bob Bostad is expected to take over as offensive line coach once again. You know, we've talked about that in the last couple episodes that he was the prime choice, and it makes too much sense for him not to take that spot back over. And now it sounds like that is, in fact, the case. So we'll start there because then that leads to the offensive coordinator position. Bob Bostad coming back to the offensive line, what do you make of it? How do you think that will work out for the Badgers to get him back in that position? I think sometimes people forget that he was there before and had a tremendous amount of success. So him moving back, I think, will be hopefully a nice spark for the Badgers.
Yeah, I love it. We talked about it. I mean, when we had our Wednesday podcast, the news came out about 2 hours after it dropped, which is, of course, how podcasting works all the time. But I think we said that it was a matter of time, of if or of when, not if, for Bob Bostad becoming the offensive line coach. And looking at it, he's got a tremendous resume. That you look back years and years of experience coaching the offensive line, back dating back to, I think, predates you being born, Tyler. Like,
because
1990 is,
yep. Yeah, 94 so, right here. So
yeah, so you've got a guy who's been coaching the offensive line for a really long time. Switched over out of necessity to the inside linebacker room since 2017, and we've only seen just how good that inside linebacker room has been under his tutelage. So I think Wisconsin did the right thing here. They bopped him over. I think he's going to probably be your run game coordinator too, has experience doing that with the Badgers. But he brings NFL experience. He brings collegiate experience. I think just the way that he goes about coaching the position, the toughness that he instills, I think is going to be a really nice way to attack the talent in this room and push them. Because you look at guys like Logan Brown, it's now or never time. And if there's a person that's going to be able to push you into a corner and say, let's do this, it's Bob Bostad, if you've ever talked to him. Very nice guy, but he is also an intimidating force. So
most
I think that's, yeah, like he's a guy that can definitely bring that out. So I think that this is a really big shift in the program that I think not only is going to reverberate to that offensive line, but also to the entire offense, because I think just the way that he attacks things, I think sends a message. And you saw, I mean, you saw the two inside linebackers. They set the tone for that defense the past few years. I think it's going to be the same thing where you're getting back to hopefully Wisconsin offensive lines being the kind of the propeller to keep this offense going, because we've seen the offense has not been in what we thought it would be the past 2 years. This is a shift that I think could help get closer to where Wisconsin and Paul Chris wants it to be.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think when you look at Bob Bosa, he's, like you mentioned, an intimidating figure for sure. You can see just kind of sometimes he's smiling, but sometimes you'll see him. You know, I remember in spring media availability, he just kind of looked like he was ready to, you know, be done with the interviews, be done with the talking, and go out and coach football. And he's kind of had that scowl and that, not meanness, but just that look that is, you know, a dominating presence and should be able to go into that Wisconsin offensive line room and really coach some toughness. I think when you think back to when he was, of course, the offensive line coach before with Wisconsin, he was really a presence that I think that group was, of course, incredibly physical and strong and powerful, but they were also just kind of, they kind of had that meanness, that tenacity that you want on the offensive line, that nastiness. And I think they can get this group back to that. You know, of course, Joe Rudolph had his own methodology, and he did a tremendous job in the offensive line as well. But I think Bob Bosa coming in and kind of putting that culture back into the Wisconsin offensive line room is certainly a way that you could look at it and say, okay, this group can really take it back to the level that Wisconsin football wants it to get to. You know, this group has not, you know, it's had its ups and downs the last couple of years, but I think we can all sit here and agree that based on the group this team has going into next year with some veterans back, you're going to have some younger guys, you know, working into their second year. You're in the two deep, you'll probably have some young guys that haven't had a ton of experience. So getting this position in place and getting them working under him right now, I think will be huge for this team as they move forward, because the longer they wait on nailing this position down and nailing the offensive coordinator position down, as we get to, that we'll get to here in just a second, the less time you have when you actually, you know, get to work with these guys. So I think Bosa taking back that offensive line room is a huge positive, and I'm excited to see what, you know, him being back on the offensive side with Chris and possibly a new offensive coordinator, what that means and what this, you know, kind of group can get back to with Wisconsin football, because we've seen when, you know, those two are working together, Wisconsin had some really explosive offenses, and I think they could certainly, I'm not going to sit here and say they're going to be, you know, those teams that were winning Big Ten championships and really just running all over the place. It's going to take some time to build back up, but I think having that brainchild essentially in there to hopefully get this offense back moving the way they want to go is certainly it's a possibility on the horizon to get back to that point.
Absolutely. I mean, you look back at the players that he helped get to the NFL, and it's a huge list. Like from his time at Wisconsin along the offensive line from 2006 through 2011. You can fill out an entire offensive line room in the NFL if you kind of aggregate them together. That was he just continued to pump out good offensive lines. Hopefully Wisconsin can get back there, because there's talent in that room. Joe Rudolph has done a phenomenal job of recruiting that position the past 3 or 4 years. Now it's a matter of developing these guys and getting to a point where they're doing what their star rating says they should be doing. And there was times where that you saw glimpses and where guys were playing well, but it's about getting that cohesion together that this offensive line is going to look across anybody. They're not, and they don't have those games against a team like Penn State or Michigan or Notre Dame where they're kind of overwhelmed up front at times and can't run the ball. Because Wisconsin, when they can't run the ball, is not Wisconsin. Like, that offense is built on running the ball, and hopefully they can get back to that under Bosa.
Yeah, but certainly fun to watch as he gets back and takes over that room. Of course, we'll wait for the official word, but as we've seen from multiple outlets, again, expected to take over as UW's offensive line coach, and will certainly be fun to watch that position and see how it blooms. Up next, of course, we've got the other rumor that's kind of going around, and according to kind of what we talked about the last couple episodes, again, Bobby Engram is reportedly Wisconsin's top choice for the offensive coordinator position. So the, to me, it sounds like if he wants that job, it's going to be his toward the taking. It seems like you've got a situation where I think Wisconsin wants somebody that they're comfortable with. Of course, him and Paul Chryst have worked together. So it makes a ton of sense. It's just more so maybe waiting and ironing out the final steps of this position. And of course, if the other thing in the air is if he for some reason doesn't want it, that's kind of something that could hinder it in many different ways. So in terms of before we kind of get into what it means, do you want to give just the listeners, I know we've kind of talked about it before, but do you want to just give a rundown of who Bobby Engram kind of is, where he's been, what he's done, and why Wisconsin's kind of interested in him as their top choice for this position?
Yeah. You know, going back to even college career, he won the Biletnikoff Award with Penn State. So he was a tremendous player. Ended up playing for the Bears, which I'm sure Packer fans are going to be like, ugh. But then he went on to the Seahawks, played a few more seasons in the NFL. But he was a multi-year or a guy who stuck around in the NFL for over a decade. Then he went directly into coaching with Pitt. I mean, he started off with the 49ers, but then went to Pitt under Paul Chryst. Paul Chryst hired him to be his wide receivers coach. He was there for a couple of years. And then when about the time that Paul Chryst came back to Wisconsin, Bobby Engram ended up with the Baltimore Ravens, where he's been since 2014. So he's been a wide receivers coach for 4 or 5 years, and then he's also been the Baltimore Ravens tight ends coach as well for a couple of years now here. Helped bring along a guy like Mark Andrews, who's one of the better tight ends in the NFL right now, a younger guy who's kind of, really blown up here of late. But you look at it, he does not have play calling experience. So he has been a wide receivers coach and a tight ends coach. But for one of the most consistent and well-run organizations in the entire NFL, right, the Ravens have consistent success over the time that he's been there. It hasn't been where they've had huge ebbs and flows. Like, this has been one of the best organizations out there. And while he hasn't called plays, you've also seen coaches from that Baltimore Ravens tree go on and kind of help turn around things. I think of Michigan here recently with McDonald, kind of bumped over there, and boom, Michigan sees a much better offense. No, that's not the only reason. But looking at this, I think he's a guy that brings a tremendous amount of experience, knowledge. He is the father of Dean Engram, who's a Wisconsin cornerback. He played a bunch of nickel this past year. He's also the punt returner. So there's a lot of familiarity here. I think one thing that he brings that is should not be overlooked is he, as a recruiter, he recruited really well at Pitt for the short time he was there. You look at a guy like Tyler Boyd, who has been in the NFL ever since his time with Pitt, and it was somebody that Wisconsin was after that I'm still kind of, upset that they didn't actually offer him. But you then go to where he's actually from, that DMV area, recruiting-wise, should help him out there. And he's born from South Carolina, but lived in that DMV area for so long here. I would think that there's a lot of good connections. His kid went to school there too. That can help out Wisconsin in the recruiting department, something that we've talked about ad nauseum here, that they're replacing their department. So having a guy like him definitely should help them on the trail.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Bobby Engram, a tremendous football career as a player, as a coach, at all levels. You know, played really well in college, hung around in the pros, and then vice versa with coaching ranks. Coached in college, coached at the pro level, and as you mentioned, there's not a more stable organization in the NFL than the Baltimore Ravens in terms of success and putting out personnel that they feel really good about. So I think a tremendous hire for Wisconsin. I think he does help you in the recruiting circuit. I know I've seen – I'm glad you mentioned it. I know people have talked about – I think the reaction online is, okay, but has he called plays before? Or, oh, no, he hasn't called plays before. And that's certainly true. But I think you also can look at it and go, just because Wisconsin's bringing in an offensive coordinator, you would think that you would get to a point where he calls the plays, but it doesn't necessarily 100% mean that Paul Chryst is going to give that up. I know we've talked about that before on the show, but – and there's still certainly a lot on Paul Kerr's plate with being the head coach, being the quarterback's, you know, kind of overseer, not official title, but he's the guy that's working with the quarterbacks and then calling the plays. It is a lot, so you would think if you're bringing in an offensive coordinator, you want to have them maybe take some of that load off, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be that situation. So certainly I think it's a situation where he could come in and he could bring some ideas and really help revitalize this offense, but Paul Kerr could still be the guy that's making the calls. We won't know what that situation is. I'm guessing even if Bobby Engram is hired, someone will ask it, and Paul Kerr will give his classic, you know, kind of work around the question because they're going to still try and feel it out. But I would think those conversations are things that they're going to have and work through, and that might be part of the decision-making on Bobby Engram's end as well. But you're looking at a guy that's had a tremendous amount of experience, you know, playing, coaching, and I think could certainly take over play-calling duties and hopefully has success moving forward there. Just because he hasn't done it doesn't mean that he can't. So I'm interested to see if it gets to that point and how that kind of works out. But in terms of pedigree and resume, from a guy like Bobby Engram, it's hard to look out and see other candidates and find a guy with more quality experience at the collegiate level and at the pro level. And I think Wisconsin would be lucky to have a guy like him entering their ranks as a coach in the coaching staff.
Yeah, and Wisconsin has really made an effort here of late to bring in guys with NFL experience on their coaching mm-hmm. staff. You look at Bobby April, you look at Bob Bostead, holy crap, they're going to have a lot of Bobs. But but you're bringing in a lot of guys. Gary Brown here, lots of guys with NFL experience. You can also talk about Elvis Whitted. Like, that has been something that Paul Kerr has made a concerted effort for, it looks like. And you've got a defensive coordinator who played in the NFL for a long, long time. So that's a selling point for recruits as well, which I think is going to resonate. And I agree with you that I think Paul Kerr is going to probably still call plays or have a hand in play calling, especially early on. But hopefully this is something where Bobby Engram can be developed and eventually kind of take over that role to help. But I do think that regardless, he's going to bring in some fresh ideas, some new wrinkles to help kind of invigorate this offense a little bit, especially as in the passing game. I think run game, that's going to be fairly similar to what we've seen. I think really with Bob Bostead coming in, your run game coordinator, I'm guessing that'll be fairly similar. But in the passing game where things need to be kind of tweaked and shifted here, I think you're going to see some new concepts, some new wrinkles that'll help with not only tight ends but wide receivers, given his experience there. And I think that leads into a really interesting next point is you're bringing him in. That rounds out your coaches here, like, because that would give you the correct number of coaches, because you lost one with Joe Rudolph. You're replacing him with Bobby Engram. But then where does Bobby Engram fit in as a position coach? Because most of the time you're not just going to bring in an offensive coordinator to just be an offensive coordinator, right? Like, so what are some scenarios that you can think of that maybe where might Bobby Engram fit into the picture, and how might that adjust some of the other pieces of the coaching staff?
Yeah, I think when you look at it, you know, I think you look at Bobby Engram, you coach the tight ends with Baltimore, and it would seem like a situation where he could maybe take that room over. And, you know, I think we've talked about this a little bit already, but Mickey Turner, who's the current tight ends coach, could certainly shift into a recruiting role. I think if a guy like Mickey Turner, if anyone listeners have ever talked to him or heard him speak, he's probably a guy that you'd love to have as like a face of recruiting type guy, very well spoken. Just if he was coming into your living room to pitch your a parent on selling a school, he's a guy that I think could go in there and do that really well. So if you look at it just based on past experience, I think that would make a ton of sense for maybe Engram to shift into there and Mickey Turner to shift into a more recruiting role. Will that work out? Because the other position that he's, of course, coached is wide receiver. But when you look at Elvis Whitted as kind of the guy that you just brought in to coach that room, so I can't imagine you're going to want to make much change there. So in terms of all these moving pieces, you know, you kind of moved Bobby April to the linebackers as a whole, Bostead, the offensive line. It's just kind of all these shifts so far, if Bobby Engram is in fact the guy, have made a lot of sense. And I think when you look at if you want him to take over as position coach, that to me seems like the most likely outcome, just given his experience of coaching. You know, you just mentioned it with Mark Andrews. He's coached top-level talent in the NFL, and you certainly want that in a room. And if you have to have him coach one, not this isn't a knock on Mickey Turner or anything like that, as he's been a very good tight ends coach, but I think he could help you in other areas, and it just makes like a I think a seamless transition if he were to take over that tight ends room as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to say there's no chance that Paul Chryst wouldn't pull the plug on Elvis Whitted right away, I guess. I know that that recently happened with the Packers where he was gone after 1 year. But I don't know if that's in Paul Chryst. I think it's more likely that he's going to try to figure out a way to keep everybody on staff. I mean, he hasn't officially fired anybody. I still think there's a pretty good chance he's asked a few guys within the past 5 years to maybe look elsewhere. But I do think that's another possible path. I agree with you that I think, I mean, if they're willing to spend the money to make it so that Mickey Turner is still making the same amount as a recruiting coordinator, I think that's a perfect spot for him because he is a good recruiter. Like, he is very good at that, has good ties around. But another spot would be to shift him over to special teams, an area that I know hasn't necessarily lived up to things. And I know some people are still probably having some PTSD after that Packer game with special teams. But really looking here, Mickey Turner played a ton of special teams for the Badgers, has undoubtedly been involved with that in that role before, just because all of the coaches are involved in some component. So moving him to be the special teams coordinator, which probably would pay about the same as tight ends coach or maybe a slight bump up, and then have switching Herring to be your inside linebackers coach if they aren't sold on making it so that Bobby April, God, there's so many Bobs, ends up being your total linebackers coach. So I think that's another way to kind of finesse this if you want Ingram to be a tight ends coach. But I still do think that there's a chance that Ingram ends up at wide receivers too, just because the bulk of his experience has been at wide receiver, both as a player and as a coach. So I think that's going to be the most interesting domino. I think everything is going to be finalized here in the next couple of days in terms of Bobby Ingram. But I think the bigger thing is, where are the dominoes from this? And how does that kind of get figured out? Because Paul Chryst said in January he was going to spend time figuring out recruiting. He had to go about figuring out his coaching staff. It seems like coaching staff's getting to a point where you're getting closer. You got to think recruiting department, some of those dominoes are going to hit as well. So I think this next week is going to be interesting once the Ingram news happens. Nothing official yet, of course, but I do think it's just a matter of time, similar to what we said about Bob Bostad. This has just been going on for too long. I honestly think they had knowledge that they were going to offer the job to Ingram before they even posted that position.
Yeah, I think you gotta, you know, you cross your T's and dot your I's and make sure everything's going through the protocol and in process that way. But I think it's clear that they've had a top choice in mind, and we'll see how that shakes out. And over the next couple days, hopefully everything gets finalized and locked down, and we'll see how the rest of these moves kind of shake out. All right, guys, that wraps up our coaching talk. Now we'll get into some depth chart talk, and today we're gonna focus in on the outside linebackers. And we'll talk a little special teams to round things out. When you look at the outside linebacker room, of course, one of these dominoes was, you know, Bobby April was the outside linebackers coach. He's likely going to take over the entire linebacker room based on these moves, and I think that will still prove to be a strong group overall. But this past year, in terms of play, we of course had a great season from Nick Herbig. I think going into next year, he's going to be a guy that we look at and go, you know, remember at the start of last year with Leo Chenal and kind of the hype that he got early? I think you're going to see that same hype from Nick Herbig after another strong season from him. And then this past year, Noah Burks was a guy coming into fall and spring that said, okay, now's the time. He's a guy that's been with the program forever. He's put together some good seasons, but it's kind of drifted back. Can he get back to a productive position at that outside linebacker spot? And I think he was a very underrated piece of this defense and played extremely well. So he's going to be a guy that will certainly be missed as they move forward. But overall, what did you make of the outside linebacker room and their performance this year?
I thought they played really well. I thought specifically Herbig. I thought he really turned it on, put together a really good sophomore campaign after his freshman year. I mean, you figured he was going to take another step, but 14.5 tackles for loss, 9 sacks. He played really well, tied with the team leading with 2 forced fumbles, 3rd on the team in tackles. I think when you look at just how much Leo Chenal and Jack Sanborn kind of led this team, I think Nick Herbig was a guy who kind of got overshadowed at times, but really his ability to bend and come off the edge, I think is going to make him somebody that everybody's going to know about next year and maybe even a candidate to go off to the NFL early, because I think that he put together such a good sophomore year that he can use that for a springboard. But then, yeah, Burks I thought was good. But then I also thought Wisconsin saw some development from guys behind them and some depth there, because you didn't have to have a guy like Herbig out there every snap. And I thought that played a big role as to why you saw Noah Burks and Nick Herbig play a little bit better. Obviously, extra year, always was going to make a little more development for these guys. But I thought CJ Getz looked a little bit better. He put together 2 sacks. You saw a guy like Spencer Whitehall appear more healthy, get some good run as well. So I think Wisconsin's in a much better spot here at outside linebacker than where they were a couple years ago when you were throwing Herbig in there as a true freshman. I think you've got to feel a lot more comfortable now, even with Burks leaving. I thought that overall this group did really good job, and really that entire defense, like I said, I'm going to have a hard time picking on anybody on this defense because they were so good. And it's if people are going to have a problem with the number one defense in the country, you know, according to most metrics, then you're never going to be happy, because I thought this group played phenomenal.
Yeah, I did as well. I think, you know, Nick Herbig was a great leader of that group, but there was other guys around him that really stepped up. And now it's going to be interesting to see, of course, going into next year, kind of shifting the conversation. You'll have Nick Herbig back again, a guy I think that is going to get a ton of hype, and all of a sudden he's going to have a huge year next year. He's going to be the candidate that a lot of people pick and look to. But besides that, you've got some real talent in this room. You've got Spencer Lytle, CJ Getz, the guy that physically has been there and is a guy that seems to be able to make plays. And if he gets more opportunity, the more plays he's going to make. I think there's other guys. And Darryl Peterson was a guy that got some run out there. A really good frame on him that you could look to. I mean, even go back to, you know, a guy like TJ Bowles was very highly recruited. Now he's going to be into his next year where his jump kind of comes from. Could he be in a conversation there? And then you've got, you know, Caden Johnson. Aaron Witt is a guy that when he's been out there and healthy, he's just kind of a physical presence that just kind of scares people, because he's kind of got some nastiness to him that could be an impactful player. So there's a lot of guys in this room that, okay, Noah Burks had a really good year, and it's going to be tough to replace, but there's some serious talent in this room that I think is going to be ready to take that next jump after, you know, a full off season, another full spring into fall. I think some of these guys that, you know, I just mentioned could be guys that really step up and give you something at that outside linebacker room, where I don't think you worry as much when you've got the stable piece in Herbig and you've got a ton of potential in, you know, a handful of different guys around him that can replace Noah Burks. All of a sudden you feel like you've got a group there that can keep that same level of production, if not better, next year.
For sure. I think Herbig is going to be a big reason why this group will be just as good next year, if not better. But opposite Herbig, who would be your best guess right now as to who the other starter will be?
I'd probably go Getz. CJ Getz is a guy there. Spencer Lytle is very – I think that'd be, you know, going into spring, those two would be a really competitive one. But we've seen a lot. Darryl Peterson get a lot of snaps and run when there was openings there. And then, like I mentioned, Aaron Witt is the guy. He's kind of the wild card, a guy that you never want to count out. But I think, you know, if you had odds on favorites, I think it'd be Lytle and CJ Getz as your kind of favorites right now, with those other two maybe being a little bit more of a long shot. But I really wouldn't be surprised any kind of direction this one goes. And I think that just shows the depth that at this position and the competition that's going to be there, kind of going for, you know, 5-6 guys could be going for really just one spot, and then your third, fourth rotation guys.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Getz and Whitehall are going to get first cracks at it, just because they've been in the program a little longer and have done some good things, specifically Getz. I mean, those two were the two that were in the 2 deep throughout the entire year. Like, that's how they're
too deep looked at outside linebacker. But I agree with you. I think Caden Johnson, a four-star kid, played a bunch of special teams this past year. Is he somebody that uses that to kind of propel him into a role next season in the two deep? Darryl Peterson, we saw him get playing time early in the bowl game, which I thought was a little bit surprising after he hadn't played a whole lot in his redshirt year. But then, yeah, I do agree with you. The wild card or the dark horse here is Aaron Witt. I think you saw what he can do late in 2020 before he got injured. That strip sack he had against Wake Forest in the bowl game was a thing of beauty. And he brings something completely different than anybody else in that linebacker room. You look at the linebacker room, and most of the guys are that 6'2", 6'3", range where they're in the 230, 240 pounds where you're using speed and strength to kind of get there. Aaron Witt is 6'6", 250, and he is a very physical player. He was a guy that fits that Bob Bostead personality that wants to go out there and hit you in the mouth. I think that Witt is somebody that, if he comes back healthy this spring, could easily end up being the starter opposite Herbig, just because I do think he gives you a little bit more ability as to stop the run than some of the other guys, at least at this juncture. But then you also have somebody like Spencer Lytle, who I think is your best at dropping into coverage. Mm-hmm. So I think Wisconsin is going to use a couple different guys to replace Burks, because I think Burks was a well-rounded player. He wasn't flashy, but he was well-rounded. Whereas maybe you have a guy like Getz and Lytle and Witt kind of work interchangeably there, because they each situationally can give you something different to help you out.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense, and we'll see which one of these guys can kind of get polished in those other areas to try and take on a bigger role. But for, I would think early, in spring and early into fall, as these guys are competing, that those three could certainly be a rotation type, with Nick Herbig on the other side getting, a bulk of the snaps. You don't want him off the field all that much, but it'll be, a fun competition that'll be there at that outside linebacker position, because you're likely got five guys competing for one consistent spot and then maybe some run in the rotation. So that should be a fun one to keep an eye on. All right, before we get out of here, guys, we'll talk a little special teams and the depth chart. I think when you look at special teams overall, I don't want to say it was all bad, because I think you look at a guy like Andy Buchnevich, who has been really good as a punter. Kyle Marsh was consistent for the beginning of the season, kind of tapered off a little bit in the end of the season. Kickoffs, kick returns, punt returns, didn't really get much or feel great about any of those. So that's an area that you certainly want to get better at. But what did you make of the special teams group this past year?
Very uneven. Like you mentioned, I think Buchnevich was the guy that you were very happy about. I continue to say that he might go down. I think Kevin Stemke is going to have all the awards. Brad Nordman is going to have the NFL career and that amazing fake punt against Iowa. But Buchnevich right now has a better average punt. Right, he is punting really well, and I think he gets overlooked at times. I know he made the freak list and everything, but I do think that he is a special punter for the Badgers, considering what they've had in recent years. But I agree. I think beyond that, I think you have to be happy with what you saw from Stephon Bracey later in the year when he got his chance at kick return, because before that, it wasn't great. Kick return there wasn't much that you were getting there. Punt return was probably the biggest nightmare of this group. You saw bad bounces, you saw bad approaches, you saw muffs. There was all sorts of different things happening back there, regardless of who they put. So I think that would be the area of biggest concern, that and kickoff. But I do think that they went in the offseason and went ahead and figured that out by saying, okay, well, Jack Van Dyke dealt with the injuries throughout the year. Colin Larsh, he's got the short-range field goals. He is not a kickoff guy. So they brought in Vito Calvaruso. I think that he's going to push Larsh in the kicking duties, and I think we'll see something similar to what we saw in 2019, where you've got somebody from deep, you've got somebody from short before Vito takes over, once Larsh is done with his eligibility. But I think that this past year, it was okay. But there was definitely moments where you were pretty upset with how special teams were handled. In addition to the whole punting thing against Minnesota, which just kind of still leaves a bad taste in the mouth.
Yeah. There certainly were times where it was not pretty with the special teams unit, and that's an area that will, as Wisconsin fans know, as Packer fans know, if that's not tightened up, that can lose you football games in a lot of different ways, because it's a third area of the game, and it seems like some teams it's overlooked. You hope that's not the case, and you know that it's probably not, but execution is so important in those areas. And if you don't, it can be a really backbreaker for a lot of different ways. So I'm excited to see what sort of competition they can have at kicker next year, like you mentioned with Larsh and Cal Russo. I think that's a nice addition to that room in terms of looking at next year and punt return, kick return, whatever guy can kick it catch it, and you don't have to worry about the fumbles and can hopefully give you at least something in a return. Great. I don't know who it's going to be. I think some guys, had some promise and showed some potential there. But I don't care if it's Braylon Allen, Chez Malusi, any of those guys, if they're back there consistently, can catch it and give you a little bit of something, great. Let's see what they can do. And I think Wisconsin will certainly work through that and see what you've got from a punt returner. And then, as you mentioned, kickoffs, again, a part that's probably overlooked, but certainly something that I think this team could get better at. So going into next year, there's a lot of positions that we'll talk about in terms of competition and to keep an eye on. But I think a main storyline of this offseason will be, can the special teams get things buttoned up to be just a more consistent, as long as if it doesn't necessarily have to always be a positive play, but as long as you're avoiding those negatives that we've seen time and time again, I think that would be a huge win for this team in the offseason.
Absolutely, because I honestly don't see, other than kickoff, I really don't see anything depth chart-wise changing. I think you're still going to have Vujinovic at punter. You're still going to have Colin Larsh handling inside of 40, probably Calvin Russo going 40-plus. And then you're going to probably have Calvin Russo kickoffs, long snapper, Peter Bowden. Once again, we didn't hear his name all year, which is a good thing. Then you might have a new holder just because Connor Schlichting, who was a senior, is going to probably be gone. But then I'm guessing Dean Ingram gets first dibs at punt return. Mm-hmm. I think, like you mentioned, we want to see a little bit more from him, better decision-making at times. But then I think that Bracey earned the right to be your kickoff return guy after that kickoff return for a touchdown. So I think that you're hopefully going to see some better and more consistency for that position, but I think it's going to also come down to, is there new leadership there? Because if Mickey Turner bops over to special teams, he might have a different philosophy or a different way to approach it overall, which could be a good thing. So I think special teams is going to be an interesting one to watch, but I really don't think that there's going to be a lot of changes in way of the depth chart.
No, hopefully not too many changes, just hopefully some improvement from the play overall, and we'll see a much better special teams unit. We can dream about that all offseason. All right, guys, that wraps up another episode of the podcast. As always, thank you for listening. We'll be back with you later in the week on Wisconsin. ¶¶